and WZBU New Holstein Appleton, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation, a civic media station.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Harvard University appearing in federal court Monday, challenging the $2.5 billion in federal research money President Trump has pulled from Harvard's budget. Kristen Weld, president of the American Association of University Professors, speaking outside the court, says it's an attempt at government control of the nation's oldest and arguably most prestigious university.
The government wants to tell students what they can and cannot learn, what questions they can and cannot ask, who they can and cannot aspire to be.
The Trump administration says the funding cuts are due to a change in federal priorities. The nation's still shocked at the death of Malcolm Jamal Warner, the best known for playing the Theo Huxtable on The Cosby Show. He was caught in a rip current while swimming off Costa Rica. The former Louisville police officer convicted of violating Breonna Taylor's civil rights, sentenced to 3.5 years in prison. The Justice Department had asked for a one-day prison sentence. This is ABC News.
As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. If you're in the Madison area and looking for a cool event, check out the annual Atwood Fest. This amazing music festival features 3 stages, great food, and great East Side vibes. Saturday, you can catch bands like Rare Element, Mama Dig Down's Brass Band, love that name, American Scarecrows, and Madison favorites VO5. Sunday features local favorites like Steely Dane, the Jeremiah Jams Band, and the Mark Hembry Bluegrass Band. Atwood Fest takes place, you guessed it, in Madison's Atwood Hood this Saturday, July 26th from noon to 10 p.m., and Sunday, the 27th, from noon to 7:30. Who doesn't love a Cinderella story, especially when it's literally a Cinderella story? Disney is in the works for a new take on the classic Rodgers and Hammerstein story of the overworked Cinderella. The new look will be told from the standpoint of the godparents. Jennifer Lopez is attached as an executive producer, but there is no cast attached yet. The original Cinderella dropped in 1957 with Julie Andrews playing the title character. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
A shutout in Seattle. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. Baseball, the Brewers with a 6-0 shutout win over the Seattle Mariners. The crew held hitless until the top of the sixth when Joey Ortiz got on base, then slid into home plate. FanDuel Wisconsin.
Contreras, a high fly into right. Ortiz back to tag. Canzone under it, makes the catch. Here's the throw home. Ortiz slides. He's safe. 1-0 Brewers on the sack fly by Contreras.
Ortiz kicking off a 4-run inning. Pat Murphy.
Then Terang, and then Contreras sack, and then Yelly base hit, and then Churio missile, and Collins walk. I mean, that's 7 quality at-bats in a row. That's what you have to do. You got to stack them. That's how you get crooked numbers, if you stack them. And yeah.
So for now, Milwaukee has the best win-loss record in baseball and 1 game ahead of the Cubs. They lost 12-4 to the Royals at Wrigley Field. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
For 75 years, the Muscular Dystrophy Association's voices have thundered through the halls of Congress.
For 75 years, we've willed the impossible into existence.
For 75 years, the MDA community has pushed the science,
shifted the narrative,
and established the field of neuromuscular medicine.
And until that day, when this is all a thing of the past,
you couldn't stop us if you tried.
Join us and celebrate 75 years of breakthroughs at MDA75.org.
Todd Alba.
Hey everybody, join us next time. An important topic, the increase in death by suicide by Wisconsin's elderly. Folks from Wisconsin Watch will join us and discuss. Be here.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4. As Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Mostly sunny today with a high in the low 80s this afternoon. Tonight, mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Our low dropping into the low 70s. Tomorrow, sunny, hot, humid, scattered thunderstorms with a high near 88. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Current temp 62.
Matt Nair on Air.
Author of America, Let Me In, Felipe Torres Medina is here.
My funny book about immigration. You can see how the current administration and their policies are affecting the communities. But I'm a comedian. It is really sad, but how about some jokes? Because that's the only way I can, you know.
If we don't take a moment to laugh about something, we're all going to self-destruct.
100%.
Matt Nair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Maggie Dawn.
At 5 o'clock, I'm joined by State Senator Kristen Dasler-Alfheim. We talk biennial budget, the uncertainty over Governor Evers' second run, and how progressives and Democrats move forward in unity here in Wisconsin. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
Well, the heat starts building in Wisconsin. Welcome to a Tuesday. Fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke. So glad you're making us a part of it. We'll talk weather with Stu Muck, our ag meteorologist, in just a little bit. But the forecast in front of me calling for sunshine today. Daytime highs right around 86. Little bit of a breeze today out of the south, about 5 to 10 miles an hour. Tonight, down to about 74, so not cooling down all that much. Wednesday, 30% chance of showers or thunderstorms in the morning. Otherwise, mostly cloudy Wednesday on the way. Highs near 92 with heat indexes tomorrow that will easily push into the 100-degree mark. And the winds tomorrow a little bit stronger out of the south, gusting up to 25 miles an hour. For Thursday, another slight chance of showers in the morning. Otherwise, mostly sunny Thursday. Daytime highs around 89 again, with those heat indices moving well into the 100-degree plus mark. Like I said, Stu's got the weather details on the way. We'll see if the weather is influencing our markets at all. John Heinberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing, joining us as usual for a Tuesday morning and taking a little closer look at the big, beautiful bill and taxes. Farmers might be seeing some benefits in all that complicated language. One of our University Extension legal experts will be breaking it down with Stephanie Hoff. Stick around.
This is the sound of corn pests wreaking havoc on your crops. This is the sound of a channel field protected by Bayer's trait technology. With the RNAi technology of SmartStax Pro, the all-in corn rootworm fighter, and VT4 Pro, Bayer's wider spectrum of defense, you can stay one step ahead of ever-changing pest pressure. Find the right corn trait for your fields at channel.com/corntraits. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
I'm Kylie Allen from the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison, here today talking to Mark Renz. Mark is a professor and extension specialist, and today we're looking at all things alfalfa and weed management. Mark, what are we seeing right now for weeds in our alfalfa crop?
Yeah, well, thanks. Weeds are typically a problem, and really alfalfa is two different crops. We have the establishment year alfalfa, and those are the ones that are right now just about being harvested. So hopefully we've had good weed management and been able to keep those weed populations down. Kind of some of our data is if we can keep those weed populations down so it's less than 10% of the overall biomass in the first harvest, then we can optimize our yield as far as quantity and still have really high quality forage. So that's always the goal, and there is a bunch of different tools that are options. The other crop is the established crop, and that's already been harvested at least two times, probably close to our third harvest, maybe here in some areas. That one, it really depends on the stand status of it. We've had a very wet spring, and so that's good that we get growth, but that delays some of the harvest, and so that can cause some harvesting issues, and we may get some weeds that are starting to establish and pop up. So really, the key thing from a weed management aspect now in alfalfa is just to be scouting, looking for weeds, and looking for stresses to that alfalfa planting growing. Because usually alfalfa is pretty competitive, but when it gets stressed, that's when the weeds take over.
What are some of those signs that producers should be looking for when they're scouting their fields?
Well, I think the first place to look for is just look for areas where that alfalfa is not growing effectively, and then we see suppressed growth and weeds taking over. A lot of times with these harvests, the harvest will actually manage and remove those weeds, so that's good. But if that alfalfa isn't growing well, then it might the weeds might come back and affect the competitive ability of that too. So just keep a lookout for those. And if you do see those weeds, we don't really have a lot of options. So then we have to look at which type of, are we going to manage it, yes or no? I always tell people that if you're going to use a herbicide, you need to get the value of that herbicide in yield in that subsequent cutting. If you think you are, you want to make it that application in a timely fashion. And it's really important because these different herbicides have different restrictions associated with them. Some of them can be applied anytime when the alfalfa is growing. Some can only be applied in certain windows. So we need to really educate ourselves about what those scenarios are.
And if someone is looking to educate themselves on that specifically, where should they go for that information?
Yeah, there's a lot of great resources. I think the number one resource I say is talk to someone who specializes in alfalfa, and they can really give you the best resources for your state. In Wisconsin, we have a lot of resources. We've got a publication that recommends herbicide applications and has all those restrictions summarized. There's also look at labels. You can talk to the co-op who you're buying that from or the applicator if you're not applying them. But make sure you're following all those restrictions carefully. The benefit, though, is alfalfa is really competitive. So if you do your job right and take care of that alfalfa, usually those weed problems go away. And particularly in the era of herbicide-resistant weeds, alfalfa can really be a solution. Because what are we doing to alfalfa every 30 days or so? We're harvesting it. And when we harvest it, we're preventing that plant from producing weeds and suppressing it. And so in many cases where we have populations of herbicide-resistant weeds that we can't kill with a herbicide, getting alfalfa in that landscape can help us manage those weeds and keep those populations down. So when we rotate back into, say, corn or wheat or another crop, the populations are low and much more easy to manage.
So you mentioned that our weather that we've had lately is kind of lending to some of those weeds that we're seeing.
Yeah, I mean, it really comes down to a couple things. So we've had, right now here we're in La Crosse, Wisconsin, or just outside of La Crosse, they've had something like 7 or 8 inches of rain in the last 10 days. So that's going to impact, we can't get in the field, we can't harvest, we can't do any of our typical management activities. So that's going to put the alfalfa at, stress it and put it as a disadvantage. But weeds are weeds because they can grow in bad conditions. And so they take advantage of that lack of competition from that alfalfa, and they can take off. We're also not able to harvest it in a timely fashion, and harvesting it is one of our biggest strategies for controlling these annual weeds in particular.
So then can you walk me through some of maybe the differences you see in weeds in the different parts of the state?
Wow, that is a great question. So there's, believe it or not, there's more similarities than differences. I'm always amazed as a weed scientist that we have the same weeds growing in these very different parts that have sandy soils or not so sandy soils. It really comes down to the management or the cropping system that we're and how we manage the crops that are in other years. With the advent of Roundup Ready crops, we're really doing a pretty good job suppressing many of our perennial weeds. So many of our weeds are annuals, with the exception of dandelions. And that's pretty consistent throughout the state. But in some areas where we may be growing more wheat, we may see different crops versus others, whether using cultivation or tillage. But it's surprisingly more similar than different across the regions. And it's really very site-specific. So I can go to a corner in southeastern Wisconsin and have very similar weeds to a corner in the central part of the state. But then you can go to the next field and it'll be totally different. So it's really, really unique, provides a lot of job security.
If you had to give one piece of advice to producers when it comes to managing those weeds in their alfalfa fields, what is that piece of advice?
That's a great question. I think to really be an effective at managing weeds in alfalfa, you need to really take care of your alfalfa and really focus on good establishment. It's that establishment year that the weeds are most impactful. And if you can do your job right, follow proper agronomic practices, control your pests, you may not have to manage weeds for 1 or 2 years after that because you have such a competitive stand. So just take care of your alfalfa through proper fertility, cutting practices, and trying to limit the stress to that whenever possible. That's probably the best advice I could give.
Is there anything else you think I should be asking in the world of alfalfa and weeds?
I think the last question, I think just a word of caution, is we're seeing a lot of reports of herbicide carryover. And what that is that, say, you're growing corn the year before you plant alfalfa, and we're controlling the weeds with certain herbicides in corn. And what's happening is those corn herbicides are persisting, and the following year when we plant the alfalfa, they're damaging the establishment of the alfalfa and preventing successful establishment. So how do we prevent that? We need to just make sure when we spray those herbicides the year before, we check the label and make sure we're following the proper rotational intervals that we're not planting back. That's probably the biggest piece of advice I can make, and try to follow those labels and those restrictions so we don't have poor establishment.
So if there was someone who maybe didn't take note of those labels and is finding themselves in that situation right now, what's your word of advice?
Well, so there's really very little you can do. So if you say you have a scenario where you're going into the fall or the following spring before you're planting the alfalfa and you're concerned about herbicide carryover, the only thing we know you can do is you can till the soil. Because what that will do is it will do two things. The first thing it'll do is it'll dilute the herbicide because you're mixing it throughout a larger soil volume. And also it promotes microbes in the soil to become more active, and they'll break down that herbicide hopefully faster. That's really the only thing we know you can do. There's some other thoughts on things you can do, but none of it has been thoroughly vetted. That's actually an active area of research we're working on right now.
Interesting. And then if someone is going to go the route of tilling, at what point in the year should that be? At what point in the crop growth?
So the typical scenario that we get is they're growing corn, maybe corn silage in Wisconsin. We grow a lot of corn silage. And that after they harvest that corn silage in the fall would be a good time to do tillage, because that allows for that herbicide, that dilution, and then allows that soil to be active and to break down those soils before planting that alfalfa the next spring.
Keeping a keen eye on the weeds in our alfalfa crop, that was Mark Renz, professor and extension specialist with UW-Madison. From the southern end of the world's longest barn in Madison, I'm Kylie Allen.
What weather is in store for the Midwest today? Stay tuned as ag meteorologist Stu Muck gives you the latest forecast in just moments, right here on the Midwest Farm Report.
This is 98.3 and 96.5 WISS, home of Net and Air on Air.
It's the Eco Minute, powered by Clean Wisconsin, your environmental voice since 1970. I'm Amy Berrio. An unwelcome surprise for Wisconsin farmers looking to apply for the Federal Rural Energy for America program, or REAP. The popular program helps rural small businesses and farmers invest in money-saving energy efficiency upgrades and clean energy. But the application window that was supposed to open July 1st was abruptly closed by the USDA. The agency says it's delaying the grant application window. The EPA is awarding a $700,000 grant to help Kenosha County pay for the final phase of restoration of the Pike River. Crews are restoring banks and habitat along the river and planting native pollinator-friendly plants. The project is aimed at improving the quality of water flowing into Lake Michigan. For a deep dive into environmental issues impacting Wisconsin, check out my Defender podcast at cleanwisconsin.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
I love playing sports, especially for my school. And that's because school sports are special. It's where it's safe to fail. It's where we're taught resilience, where our fear becomes confidence. It's where we learn to get back up after every fall. School sports are where 7.8 million students go from I can't to I can.
This message presented by the WIAA and the Wisconsin Athletic Directors Association.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
We've got Chris from Nina. What's your thought this afternoon, Chris?
Oftentimes you have only one set of viewers that will watch Fox News or watch CNN. What I really actually love and respect from all your viewers is the fact that you tend to have viewers that think on both sides of the aisle. To be open-minded, you need to be willing to listen and learn and possibly change your mind. You don't have to change your mind, but just being willing to listen.
The award-winning Maggie Dawn Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 until 6.
Finally, a voice for real news and great conversation in the Fox Valley, WISS.
Jay Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, our road companion from last week and our friend and colleague here at Civic Media, Todd Alba, will be here to break down all the news. Join us.
Matinair on Air, weekday mornings 9 to 11.
This is 98.3 and 96.5 WISS, home of the Todd Alba Show.
They are going to definitely rise starting today and certainly for tomorrow.
Yeah, and kind of hangs on through the week. Now, what about this rain possibility? Are we looking at measurable amounts or just trace?
Well, there is some possibility. Yeah, measurable trace. It's not going to be a whole lot. I mean, again, today it's way back in North Dakota, northern South Dakota, just into far western Minnesota. Now, there was some rain that slipped through far northern Wisconsin yesterday, not amounting to a great deal here or there, you know, tenth of an inch here and there. That possibility could redevelop a bit later today, certainly then late tonight or on into the day Wednesday, but that's when the heat really turns on, and there's an extreme heat watch in about the southeastern quarter of Wisconsin, and that kicks in from 10 a.m. Wednesday, lasts till 7 p.m. Thursday. In that time frame, we're talking about the heat index that most likely will be pushing up somewhere in that upper 90 and low 100 range. There's a flood watch in far northwest Wisconsin. That's Hayward and Park Falls, that area. That kicks in at 7 tonight and lasts till 7 a.m. on Thursday, because the rain could get heavy. You know, that localized training, that real slow-moving system, could provide a lot of heavy rain in far northwest Wisconsin. We'll watch that. I don't expect that statewide, but there will be some rain. The chance around, especially later on tonight or into early Wednesday, and that chance then late on Wednesday into Thursday when showers and thunderstorms develop. But all in all, I'd say for everywhere except maybe that far northwest part of the state, we're talking some quarter to half inch amounts that could be about the extent, but it's going to come along with that very hot weather. The heat really cranking up starting today, really building on into Wednesday, not dropping off too quickly into Thursday either, but cooling a little bit by the end of the week. A warm front does move up out of the south. That front still from South Dakota down into Iowa, southern Illinois. It pushes up into Wisconsin, really brings in that hot air and that hot weather, and then a cool front finally will swing through and start to break it down, and that happens later Thursday on toward Friday. The wind's not all that strong, not going to be a major problem, you know, not a major windstorm bringing in that cooler air, but it will be a little breezy on through Thursday and Friday. But we'll start knocking those temps down somewhat. Even the weekend, though, not all that cool, still in the upper 80s. I'd expect some low 90s in the south already Sunday and Monday. So the summery weather, call it the dog days of summer, if you will, they are settling in and are going to be around here, especially as we head on through tonight and tomorrow, and then later on in the week, the weekend as well. That real warm summertime pattern has settled on in. I'll have forecast details right after this.
The only competition that really matters is you versus you. And with the performance of Veltima fungicide from BASF, you can take your best results even further. Veltima fungicide is on your side to out-yield the competition by an average of 7 bushels per acre, but you've never been average. Beat your own record, get every bushel you deserve, and make this your best season yet with Veltima fungicide from BASF. Always read and follow label directions.
Hey, Wisconsin, are you feeling summer? Then it's time to feel cheesy. It's time to feel good. July 31st through August 10th, only at the Wisconsin State Fair. Presented by U.S. Cellular.
This is the sound of corn pests wreaking havoc on your crops. This is the sound of a channel field protected by Bayer's trait technology. With the RNAi technology of SmartStax Pro, the all-in corn rootworm fighter, and VT4 Pro, Bayer's wider spectrum of defense, you can stay one step ahead of ever-changing pest pressure. Find the right corn trait for your fields at channel.com/corn traits. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
I almost hate to ask, but you better give us the forecast, too.
Yeah, we don't want to hear it. It's going to be hot. Of course, that southeast part of Wisconsin under the extreme heat watch from 10 a.m. Wednesday to 7 p.m. Thursday. And, of course, that flood watch in the far northwest. Today, generally some sunshine, could be a little rain in the northwest again later on. A lot of us in the upper 80s today with the south winds at 5 to 10. That chance of a shower or thunderstorm late today in the north and then overnight further south. Nighttime lows don't drop that far. Upper 60s and low 70s, staying very steamy in the nighttime with those south winds 5 to 15. Tomorrow, well, there comes our rain. Mostly cloudy, warm, at least early. More sun later in the day. Could be a shower or storm. early in the day, especially in the east and south. Again, late in the day, further north, and up into the 90s. South winds 5 to 15, gusting to 25. And even Thursday, Pam, that chance of rain could be early and late in the day. And, of course, still very warm, upper 80s, about 90 degrees in the south. Southwest winds 5 to 15. Heat indexes tomorrow and Thursday up into the upper 90s, the low triple digits in southern Wisconsin. Take it easy in the heat.
Oh, I just think about those poor folks that are going to be at county fairs. You know, that's where our focus is at this time of the year. They know it's coming. They know how to deal with it, but it doesn't make it any easier.
No, it doesn't make it fun at all.
No. All right, buddy. Good enough. We'll check in with you tomorrow.
You got it. See you then.
Stu Muck, ag meteorologist, with a quick update on what's happening with weather in your backyard. And again, rainfall reporters, get ready. 877-301-FARM. That's 877-301-3276. That's our talk text line. You're welcome to use it anytime. Let me know how things are going in your neighborhood. I'd love to see what you have to say. Talk text line open now.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Young.
A new choice. The Fox Valley's real news and great conversation. WISS.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. We now take you to a recent segment of the Maggie Dawn Show about a proposed bill that would affect local farmers.
Folks, if you're just joining us, I'm joined this half hour by Senator Brad Pfaff of the 32nd State Senate District. He has introduced three key pieces of legislation this cycle to help support Wisconsin farmers and families. Let's talk a little bit about a few of the bills that you've introduced this year. I want to start with the most recent one because it's so incredibly important in light of what's going on federally. It is the Agricultural Purchase Program. Tell folks a little bit about it.
I did introduce legislation that, again, links consumers with our family farmers. It recognizes that this piece of legislation that was jammed through Congress last week is going to have an impact, and I would say a negative impact, on too many individuals that, through no fault of their own, are seeking food assistance at different times in their life. And so what this piece of legislation does is very simple. It provides grants to the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture. And then the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture would work with local food organizations in order to provide financial assistance. And those local food organizations then would contract directly with local farmers to receive the bring in the food that they seek. May it be meats, may it be milk, may it be cheeses, may it be maple syrup, whatever it may be. And so, again, it is trying to broaden out the supply chain as far as with agriculture, and at the same time, it's linking family farmers with consumers. And I think that is so very important. And what it's also doing is it recognizes during when there are challenges and dips in the marketplace and people are down on their luck, that we're just not throwing people to the street. We're recognizing the fact in a wealthy nation and a state like Wisconsin that grows food, we want to make sure that we can feed our neighbors.
People, because we have been rightly focused on the big, brutal bill, as well as the state's biennial budget, people forget that one of the first things that Donald Trump did was cut all kinds of aid programs willy-nilly through executive orders, and it ended up immediately hurting Wisconsin farmers because we literally had food rotting in storage houses, not getting to the people that need the food. This most recent bill is called the Agricultural Purchase Program. It's a bill to establish a $30 million fund within the Department of Agriculture, again, to make sure that families in need of emergency food assistance in the state get it, and that they get that food assistance from our family farms.
To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to civicmedia.us/shows.
98.3 and 96.5 WISS, home of Nightlight with Peach Wabba.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Harvard University appearing in federal court Monday, challenging the $2.5 billion in federal research money President Trump has pulled from Harvard's budget. Kristen Weld, president of the American Association of University Professors, speaking outside the court, says it's an attempt at government control of the nation's oldest and arguably most prestigious university.
The government wants to tell students what they can and cannot learn, what questions they can and cannot ask,
who they can and cannot aspire to be.
The Trump administration says the funding cuts are due to a change in federal priorities. The nation's still shocked at the death of Malcolm Jamal Warner, the best known for playing the Theo Huxtable on The Cosby Show. He was caught in a rip current while swimming off Costa Rica. The former Louisville police officer convicted of violating Breonna Taylor's civil rights, sentenced to 3.5 years in prison. The Justice Department had asked for a one-day prison sentence. This is ABC News.
Football starts tomorrow. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. NFL, Packers training camp beginning tomorrow morning at 10:30 with the first of 11 practices open to the public, 3 preseason games, followed by the 17-game regular season schedule. The Packers signing right tackle Zach Tom to a 4-year deal, including a signing bonus of over $30 million, the most ever for an offensive lineman. NBA, Chris Paul will join the LA Clippers and Brooke Lopez. The Bucks had shown interest in Paul earlier this summer. Baseball, the Brewers and Mariners again tonight in Seattle. The Brewers with a 6-0 win over the Mariners last night, their 11th win in a row. How did they go from fourth place to right now the best record in baseball?
I think you got to understand that this is a bunch of people that, you know, have gotten to this point and just kept clawing away. You know, they're hungry. I'm really, really proud of them, but we got work to do to improve in every area we can. But we can at least feel like we're capable.
That's Brewers manager Pat Murphy with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Pete Schwaba.
On the next Nightlight, I welcome Jordan Leon and Amy Mazzariello, owners of the Lion's Mouth Bookstore in Green Bay. Then Green Bay comedian Kristen Lighty joins the show. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. As Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
Mostly sunny today with a high in the low 80s this afternoon. Tonight, mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms. Our low dropping into the low 70s. Tomorrow, sunny, hot, humid, scattered thunderstorms with a high near 88. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable. Current temp 62.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba.
I imagine we'll talk about Superman. It's the same thing I said about F1. It's a great video. The music is great. The action's great. The CGI is great. I don't feel like they had to really develop the characters. It was fine.
I thought they did a really good job of showing Superman's, you know, humility.
I agree with you there. One of my positives, it wasn't 2 hours and 40 minutes like every other blockbuster movie this summer, but lots to like there.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Matt Nair on air.
Author of America, Let Me In, Felipe Torres Medina is here.
My funny book about immigration. You can see how the current administration and their policies are affecting the communities. But I'm a comedian. It is really sad, but how about some jokes? Because that's the only way I can, you know.
If we don't take a moment to laugh about something, we're all going to self-destruct.
100%.
Matt Nair on air. Weekday mornings 9 to 11 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You're listening to the Midwest Farm Report on the Civic Media Radio Network. We now take you to a recent episode of The Todd Alba Show, where he's joined by James Small.
Happy and proud and honored to have James Small, the Rural EMS Outreach Program Manager at the UW School of Medicine and Rural Health. James, thanks for being with us. How are you?
Well, thanks for having me on today.
Let's talk a little bit about this workforce more, because you're much more, obviously much more versed in this than I am. I know a few years back, like a good friend of mine, Troy Everson, which was integral in the Viroqua and Vernon County EMS and EMT system. He now does that down in Burlington, Wisconsin. And I know he helped get through a piece of legislation years ago where high school students that were taking courses to be volunteers were allowed to actually help and actually do some of the stuff as long as they were with a licensed person on the team. And that really opened up and not just created more workforce, but also was almost like an apprentice type of training. Have you seen that have an effect?
Yes. You're seeing in a number of different regions around the state, the technical colleges are running what they call a dual enrollment program, where high school seniors will come in and learn a trade. And one of those programs might be fire and EMS. There's been a high demand for that. I've seen the technical college systems be very successful with that. There's also some high schools that have partnered with other training centers to offer EMT training right in the schools.
Wow.
And La Follette School of Public Policy just did an EMS-related report that came out in the last couple of weeks, and one of their key recommendations was expansion of the high school EMS programs to provide somebody access to a workforce. Because those kids that are going through those programs right now are going to find a job pretty quickly after coming out of it.
And good paying with good benefits generally.
Yes. Yep. This is going to be a job that probably has a living wage with good benefits working for a government right out of high school, potentially in some cases.
Yeah.
And then continue on with further training like paramedic training and so on. But it's I think that's one tool that we need to look at. But just access to training in general. You know, when we did our ambulance reliability study a couple of years ago, one of the things that we found is about 13% of the services had an hour or more drive to a training center. Wow. Well, that's a huge barrier. If you're depending on volunteers to come in and they're going to work their regular job all day, drive an hour to training, spend 4 hours in training, drive an hour home, and then go back to their job the next day, their real job, and then they're going to do that 50 times. And that's a lot to ask of somebody who wants to come in and volunteer. So finding other access points is going to be, or alternative ways to delivering that training is something we need to do.
To subscribe and find all of Civic Media's podcast library, head over to civicmedia.us/shows.
From Oshkosh to Neenah, this is 98.3 WISS.
This year.
A soft start in the marketplace for our commodities on a Tuesday morning. What's happening there? We're going to find out. John Heinberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, our regular Tuesday guest. He'll be joining us live in about 15 minutes. Welcome back. I am the fabulous Farm Babe Pam Yonke. This is the Midwest Farm Report on this, the 22nd day of July. What little tidbits can I share with you today? Well, kind of interesting. On this day back in 1994, former NFL running back, broadcaster, and actor O.J. Simpson pleads absolutely 100% not guilty on the murder of his ex-wife. That happened on this day back in 1994. On this day, 2016, Japan's Funai Electric announces it will manufacture the world's last video cassette that month. That was on this day back in 2016. Couple of happy birthdays for you this morning. Let's say happy birthday to actor-comedian John Leguizamo. He is 61. Singer-actress Selena Gomez is 33. And actor Danny Glover turns 79 today. And now you know. Well, we know that the big, beautiful bill got signed into effect, but the details in that huge piece of work are still being revealed. Stephanie Hoff did a little deep diving on some of that language and found out that Wisconsin farmers might be seeing some tax benefits. She has more.
We're discussing changes in tax law with Extension Farm Management Specialist Kelly Wilford. In previous episodes, we covered death tax and capital gains tax changes that were made in the latest federal budget. You can find those conversations on our podcast page at MidwestFarmReport.com. Today, Kelly walks us through some general income tax adjustments that were passed in the federal budget, in addition to some farm-specific income tax provisions.
One thing that I always want to make clear is that farmers are still people too. And so I'm going to talk today about some income tax provisions that may be of interest to farmers specifically, but certainly recognize that you, your family, your neighbors might be dealing with other income tax provisions that aren't as farm specific, but still are going to impact them. The only caveat to that, the one more general income tax item that I'll talk about is about just the general income tax rate and standard deductions. I would say I wouldn't expect to feel a big change in our federal income tax, at least as far as brackets are concerned and rates are concerned, because Congress has simply extended the rates that we've been paying since 2018, 2019. We'll still see those adjustments for inflation, those typical annual adjustments, but it's not going to be a big jump. This goes back to just like the estate tax. There was a piece of legislation signed in 2018 that had a number of provisions that were going to sunset or go away at the beginning of 2026. And those changes to income tax rates and standard deductions were one of them. what would have happened without these provisions in the current budget is that we would have seen the standard deductions drop back down and the income tax rate in the brackets adjust a little bit higher as well. But instead, what we're doing, or what Congress has done, is extend what we've been working with since about 2018, 2019. So again, we'll still see those standard adjustments for inflation, but in general, it's not going to be a major change from what we experienced last year, although certainly it's a pretty significant change from what we would have seen next year had that change not been made. So that's just generally on income tax. That'll be sort of anyone who's paying income tax is going to see that.
So that was your note on general income tax. What were some of those farm-specific tax changes, aside from the death tax and capital gains adjustment we talked about in previous episodes?
There's kind of a list of specific tax provisions on the income tax side that are going to impact our farmers here in the United States. So for example, the bill brought back the deduction for qualified business income that was set to phase out. They brought back the special depreciation allowance for some qualified production property and the full expensing of certain property. You might be thinking of that as bonus depreciation. So bonus depreciation, which allows our farmers to expense certain purchases all in year one versus spreading it out. That has been getting phased out over the last few years and was set to totally go away. But again, this bill brought that back. We also saw the 45Z tax credit, the clean fuel production credit, get extended to 2030. That credit is not a credit that will be paid to farmers. It's a credit actually for the producers of fuel. But how that impacts farmers is that those fuels under the new law have to be produced from feedstocks, or those commodities that are produced in the United States, Canada, or Mexico. And so, of course, for ethanol production, biofuel production, we're going to be looking at hopefully some increased demand for our farmers who are growing those commodities. Again, simply because we have these fuel producers being incentivized to also continue to produce based on the extension of that credit. And definitely as those start to come out, farmers are going to want to be aware. They might be asked to sign certifications or comply with certain audits or inspections around their farming practices so that that fuel production facility can comply. We always just want to keep in mind that if we're signing a contract, a certification, you want to know that you're liable if anything is incorrect. And so you want to make sure you're reading everything before you sign it and know what is it that you're saying is true and how or when any regulators might be entering your farm to check compliance. Just make sure to read anything before you're signing it, especially as we're still figuring some of these programs out.
Kelly Wilford, along with us, she's a farm management specialist with the UW-Madison Division of Extension. Some notes of caution in addition to outlining some of the tax adjustments made in the federal budget. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Stephanie Hoff.
You're invited to Clinton Farms in Bear Creek for this year's Farm Technology Days, Generations of Progress. This year's event features the chance to explore cutting-edge equipment, innovative techniques, and taking a glimpse into the next generation of agriculture. There's also a rotary parlor, seminars, and, of course, field demos of all kinds. Mark your calendars for August 5th through the 7th and bring the whole family to this year's event. For more information and show details, visit wifarmtechdays.org.
The chance to learn from others who have been in your shoes is a key asset within the Wisconsin Agricultural Tourism Association. Sandy Buchholz with Country Lavender and Orchard in Kiel says she and her husband, John, gained a lot of valuable insight from WADA's peer-to-peer mentorship program that moved their agribusiness destination forward.
We really enjoyed the peer-to-peer mentor program. We learned, signage, safety, some of the different things that we need to really take in consideration as far as having people come to our farm, and then just, you know, gathered some different ideas as to what we could do to help with farm tourism.
Sandy Buchholz, along with us from Country Lavender and Orchard in Keele, Wisconsin. She invites you to visit GoWYAgTourism.com to be a part of the peer-to-peer mentorship program.
Our Wisconsin crops continue to capitalize on the weather that we've seen around Wisconsin as of Sunday. According to the Wisconsin Ag Statistical Service, 79% of our corn's in good to excellent condition, 75% of our soybeans rated good to excellent. The winter wheat harvest has begun across some of Wisconsin, 14% of that grain already in, 72% of our winter wheat crop called good to excellent. Oats look pretty good, and 3% of our potatoes have already been harvested as well. Now, markets in overnight electronic trade are not impressing me this morning. Dow Jones Industrial Average, a little on the thin side as well. Currently, September corn's down 2, December new crop down 2 at 420. August soybeans are down 3. November new crop, that's unchanged at 1026. The wheat for September is down a nickel at 537. December wheat down a nickel as well at 558 a bushel. Pretty lackluster yesterday in the dairy complex. Barrel and block cheese were both unchanged. Double A butter dropped a penny and a quarter to 250 a pound. The August class 3 milk that goes into cheese this morning, that's down 6. 1757 with September unchanged at 1809 weight. Well, it's a couple weeks yet before the school bell rings, but guess what? Some school districts are still struggling to fill vacancies, specifically vacancies in agriculture education programs. Yesterday, during the Southern Wisconsin FFA Foundation golf outing, I caught up with Cheryl Zimmerman, our executive director of the Wisconsin FFA Association, and she said it's not necessarily because of retirement that those vacancies exist, but instead, programs are growing.
What we're finding is this. We have ag programs that are adding more teachers. So now we have several programs that have 3, 4, and 5 ag teachers. We're finding we're adding programs. And so we're also going into the virtual dimension of FFA. We started our first virtual program in McFarland with Destinations Career Academy. We're going to be chartering our second one now with iForward out of Grantsburg, Wisconsin. And so that's kind of a new dimension. But there are opportunities to be an educator for agriculture, and we've still got some openings before the school year starts.
There you go. Cheryl Zimmerman, our executive director of the Wisconsin FFA Association. The other good news is that right now it looks like those students that are currently studying to become agriculture educators, those numbers are pretty robust at both UW-River Falls and UW-Platteville. All right, coming up next, markets are not robust for commodities this morning. What's going on? Our friend John Heinberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, joins us to try to give us some answers on that. It's all on the way next.
Sign up for daily agriculture updates by joining our email list. Head to MidwestFarmReport.com, enter your email address, and we'll handle the rest. More farm news straight ahead. This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Youngke.
This is 98.3 and 96.5 WISS, home of Matt and Air on Air.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government buy-in for the people. The U.S. Department of Justice sent letters to 12 secretaries of state requesting their complete voter records as part of President Trump's executive order on elections. The reason for the request isn't completely clear, nor is the legality of such a request, which may violate the privacy and free speech rights of U.S. citizens. Back in May, we reported that DOJ requested records on Colorado's 4.65 million registered voters. To date, similar letters have been received by Alaska, Arizona, Florida, Minnesota, Nevada, New Hampshire, New York, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, Rhode Island, and Wisconsin. An email sent to Rhode Island officials asked to collect, quote, voting information as part of the department's efforts to implement President Trump's executive order preserving and protecting the integrity of American elections, unquote. It goes on to request a discussion on sharing information to find illegally registered voters, fraudulent voters, and enforcement of federal law. New Hampshire Secretary of State declined, citing state statute keeping voter rolls, quote, private and confidential. In addition to the Herculean logistics of such a your request. Loyola Marymount Law School's Justin Levitt writes that such requests may not be legal under the Privacy Act of 1974, prohibiting the federal government from obtaining information on free speech activities, including voting and other personal information. We've linked the DOJ letters at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow.
I've been trying to learn sheep's head for 40 years. My father-in-law is still a card counter, knows what everybody has. It is so easy to go, oh gosh, I still don't know who the partner is. And is that a trump card or is it not? And so I'm still asking myself all these questions while they're busy taking all of my nickels. The one thing that got me where they allow me to play is getting the app. For all the technology that's out there, that is one of the positive notes.
Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. Weekdays 6 to 9 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Tom Hartman here. You're listening to WISS.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time. An important topic, the increase in death by suicide by Wisconsin's elderly. Folks from Wisconsin Watch will join us and discuss. Be here.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
This is 98.3 and 96.5 WISS, home of Net and Air on Air.
We're tight on time this morning, John, but I want to jump right into the cattle market. You know, people that have been kind of watching the grocery store prices know that beef is not coming down as far as the price is concerned, and it doesn't look like the trends you're seeing are going to change that anytime soon, huh?
No, I do not see anything at this time frame that's going to bring a supply of beef into the system. And some of that also just comes to the fact, too, it just takes a long time to get a calf to up to the marketable age in terms of getting that meat and the meat product into the cooler, a lot longer than pork or poultry, where we can really kind of turn things around pretty quickly in terms of numbers. You know, and then on top of that, just the economics behind it, you know, building the cattle herd, things of that nature, it's just a lot of expense. And we got a situation in our country where we got older producers. Some of them are just stepping aside. We don't have the new producers coming in. So right now, I don't see a whole lot changing in the near term. This Friday, we get our biannual cattle inventory report, which they do January and July. Just goes through and give us a head count of where we are in terms of cattle numbers. And one of the biggest things that everybody's going to be watching, are we seeing that beef cow herd start to grow again to produce those calves? And considering we're at a 64-year low in terms of beef cows here in the United States.
And we're not getting anything much from outside the United States right now, are we?
No, we're not. And obviously, we've got that import ban on Mexican feeder cattle, which is a big source of cattle, especially into the southern lots here in the U.S. I don't sense that coming down anytime soon. They tried to do some controlled release, opening a few different ports or points at over a span of months or weeks. They opened one up 3 days later. We found a case of the New World screwworm very close to the Mexican border, closed it down in less than 3 days. So we're basically not counting on those Mexican feeder cattle to get here probably till the first of the year, till we get some type of true control or going down there, if that's even possible. So again, those cattle numbers are going to stay tight. We're starting to see that reflect in some of these even long-term prices now, as prices well into 2026 have been on the climb in terms of what's going to be paid for the producer to get those cattle secured, get them into the meat system.
And do you see anything from the consumer side telling us that we're topped out?
What's interesting there is we really haven't, and that's been kind of the big shoe to fall, as everybody keeps waiting for, is when does the consumer get tired of these price levels? And it just seems like right now that the U.S. consumer is very content to go ahead and continue to buy beef. They've developed a taste for good quality beef, and they want that into the system, even as prices have been on the rise in that regard. And you know, we've seen still the ground beef trade, as well as the primal cut trade, or the key cuts that you see in the grocery store, continues to stay strong. Prices just recently we were near all-time highs, with the exception of, you know, when we had the COVID lockdown. So again, just tells you the consumer is really still stepping up that dollar and paying for that beef product, even despite those cheaper options for pork and poultry that are out there. You know, we'll have to see as we get closer to the fall and how things go there. Now we are in a little bit of a price slide in terms of retails, but that's kind of typical for this time of year, because the demand slows as we get into the heat of summer. Our next kind of pop will be around the Labor Day window, as we start seeing grocers start prepare for the Labor Day holiday.
John Heinberg joining us live on the Midwest Farm Report. He's a broker analyst with Total Farm Marketing, rather. TotalFarmMarketing.com is their website. 800-334-9779. The phone number if you want to catch up with John. John H at TotalFarmMarketing.com. His direct email. Let's pivot then for grain. We've got about 2 minutes left, John. Everybody talking about this heat. Wisconsin kind of late to the party as far as these temperatures. This pounding heat has been radiating everywhere else in the U.S.
It's out there, and it's something that we got to kind of keep on the radar here. Again, we're just getting in through the pollination window for corn. Beans are coming up here very soon. You know, we always say soybeans are made in August. Now, we had a strong close of the week last week. Some of those temperatures in the forecast have stayed wetter and moderated in temperature as we move into the end of the month, and that's why we saw the market kind of sell off a little bit yesterday. We're getting some heavy selling pressure today based off crop ratings. Again, corn was still very strong. Soybeans slid back a little bit, but we're still at some of the best rated beans we've seen in a while. Plus, just the global competition for both corn and soybeans continues to pressure this market. And then thrown on top of it, it's seasonal time window here where, you know, the producer needs to move old supplies, get ready for new supplies. The market kind of knows that at this window. And that's something that's going to still weigh on prices as we're in a time frame from now till probably the 1st of September, where we could see some strong selling in this market, just given the global supply as well as U.S. supplies that are moving around.
Yeah. Flatline for sure. Very good. Thank you, John. Appreciate it. John Heinberg, market advisor with Total Farm Marketing out of West Bend, joining us live here on the Midwest Farm Report. Like I said before, their website's excellent, TotalFarmMarketing.com, or give them a call, 800-334-9779. He's always good enough to join us every Tuesday morning to make sure you know what's happening in the marketplace. Stay comfortable. We'll see you tomorrow morning.
This is the Midwest Farm Report with Pam Jahnke.
Finally, a voice for real news and great conversation in the Fox Valley, WISS.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
A call for a more solid safety net for America's farmers today on Farm to Fork. The following is a public service announcement from Farm to Fork. As you're listening to this program, a dramatic paring down of 12 regional centers for agricultural safety and health is taking place. These centers rely on funding support from the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, and that agency's budget is being cut by more than 98%. Several of those centers have endorsed my 2025 Public Service Farm Safety and Health campaign, what you're listening to right now. I consider this a loss to the farming community. And while no money is changing hands, a loss to this campaign as well. These centers provide a valuable service to American farmers, their families, and their workers. If you want to make a case for retaining these centers and the services they provide, get in touch with your elected officials in Washington. If enough of you do, there may be a chance to save these services and save the lives and livelihoods of America's farmers. The Trump mega bill that was passed earlier this month included provisions normally found in the Farm Bill, such as farmer safety net programs and the SNAP program. In the Farm Policy Facts podcast, host Tom Sell offered this.
We've been doing these ad hoc things, but those are inefficient from a farmer's standpoint, right? You can't kind of plan on it. And so Congress has to come in and do kind of more than it ordinarily would. I mean, one of the points I always like to make is making long-term investments in a farm bill, something that a farmer can kind of count on, is better, more efficient use of taxpayer dollars than doing these ad hoc year by year, we got to meet the need kind of hand-to-mouth disaster programs at the end of the year.
Sal's guest was John Newton, who heads Terrain, a service that provides insights and analysis to customers of four regional farm credit associations.
What really concerns me is when we start to look at 2026. I mean, if you look at University of Missouri's Food Ag Policy Research Institute, their projections for commodity prices next year are flat to lower across the board. And we just saw USDA's projections for input costs in 2026. So you combine any slowdown in dairy margins, any slowdown in cattle prices, and all of a sudden, we could see a pretty steep drop in farm income.
That's Farm to Fork. I'm Daryl Anderson.
Maggie Dawn.
At 5 o'clock, I'm joined by State Senator Kristen Dasler-Alfheim. We talk biennial budget, the uncertainty over Governor Evers' second run, and how progressives and Democrats move forward in unity here in Wisconsin. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
Here's a chance to learn about Nina's history while in a cemetery. It's Amanda with another new Wisco 411 for you, brought to you by Area 509 in Appleton. The 40th annual Cemetery Walk is taking place on Thursday, July 24th from 6 till 8 p.m. at the Oak Hill Cemetery Chapel. Guests will enjoy learning the stories of four Nina citizens. You're encouraged to explore the gravesites of these featured individuals with signs detailing an overview of each person. It's unique, it's different, and check it out. Head to WISS.FM and click Events.
You want to feel important. You want to be a part of something bigger, something that matters and can help change things. You want to feel like you belong. We know. We felt that way too. And that's why we did something about it. We aren't just Army National Guard soldiers. We are normal people just like you. And together, we can make a difference. Take on your legacy. Visit NationalGuard.com to find out more.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin Army National Guard. Aired by the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association and this station.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
This is WISS Berlin Oshkosh and WZBU New Holstein Appleton, the Fox Valley's real news and great conversation, a Civic Media station.
ABC News, I'm Sherry Preston. Shock and sadness surrounding the death of a man we saw grow up on television.
Tributes are pouring in for actor Malcolm Jamal Warner.
Be right there.
Who charmed TV audiences for years as the lovable Theo Huxtable on The Cosby Show. Police say the 54-year-old died in an accidental drowning off Costa Rica's Caribbean coast, where he was reportedly on a family vacation. Investigators say Warner got caught in a strong current while swimming and that beachgoers tried to rescue him, but it was too late by the time first responders reached him.
That's ABC's Victor Okendo. The sheriff of Jacksonville, Florida, is defending the violent arrest of a black driver who was punched and beaten by two sheriff's deputies. A video of the arrest by the suspect, 22-year-old William McNeil, has gone viral. The sheriff claims McNeil had been told several times to leave his car. McNeil's lawyer disputes that. Harvard University in federal court Monday, fighting back against $2.5 billion in funding pulled by the Trump administration. This is ABC News.